what I could offer. You've asked, like, maybe if there's somebody out there who's had like some sort of progress or just success in general with maybe bringing some people over who not necessarily on the left, but just have a different opinion or think, like, you know, the NPC types. And I would just like kind of as a way of helping any of the listeners that are here to give some sort of like guidance on what I've used and what I've been successful with along the way. So I don't know how that sounds to you, if that's a good, fair starting point, or if you have any questions.
Yeah, sounds great. Let me know how it's gone.
I met my wife before I found you. I actually found you through Bill Will. His Trail of a Modern story was all over my YouTube. And then I saw you pop up a few times, and you had the same sort of breakdown. I remember Bill Will's, it really hit me hard. Because I was living in the area at the time that happening, and wow, just totally like blindsided me, hit me with like, wow, if there's so much stuff that's being hidden from me, and you know, I was literally like, you know, around there, it was just like, wow, what else are other people missing maybe? So you've said also many times that just be honest, and like when you start your debates with people, you usually say like, okay, can we just with the other person agree what we want is like for the better, that we both are trying to help, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, that's why you can't help each other if you can't define terms. So yeah, that's certainly the goal.
Yeah, so I mean, those sounds like such simple things, but like, you know, when you get started at like people's defenses up, and then that sort of goes by the wayside, and then, you know, if it gets a little heated, that kind of, it can kind of get ugly real fast. But what I found has been most successful is that approach where it's like, you know, hey, you know, we obviously care very much about these issues, and we want, let's say, you know, if these migrants are coming over to Europe, for instance, and then, you know, you get the Bataclan or whatever happening, and then they just make posts about like, oh, you know, see, this is what we like got to fight against, this is what these people are running from. And I'm like, yeah, but what was the whole point of them running from this type of behavior if we're just like, you know, they're just going to be experiencing it again over here? Like they think they're safe, they fleed, and then they're, you know, basically going into a massacre, you know what I mean? So I just use little like things to kind of put the point across. And I like to do social media, at least with my close friends, because it seems like I know probably like within like maybe a little bit more at 50%, maybe 80% of the time, they're not going to agree with me. They're going to disagree. And I know that like ultimately it's because of the public square, all that people's friends are going to see like, hey, well, there's other people maybe out here that think this way. And of course, you know, I do it as like a friend would, and I don't bring like the mudslinging. I'm just like, hey, you know, we all want to do this like to, you know, make things better, if that makes any sense. But the most success that I've had, like with my wife, you know, because you ask all the time, like, oh, what do you see in this other person, and what are the virtues that you find in them? And you know, my wife, she's because like I said, we've met way before started listening to you. And you know, the thing that was like the ultimate tipping point was you know, if you wanted to help more migrants according to the UN standards, you know, you could help 12 times as many people by sending the money over and donating it, so that they can, you know, fix themselves, resituate themselves, just like a win-win. You know, who wouldn't want to help 12 times as many people? And he said, you just got one person like that's being saved by a luxury liner every so often, whereas the other 11 drown. But then you make the analogy that like, hey, you get all three, there are 12 of them, like lifesavers or the whatever they're called, the inner tubes that keep them flow. Sorry. But so when I brought that to her, she was like, really? And then she, like, you know, did the research on the UN standards, and then she did more research on oh yeah, you can sell it, save it. So like, it like broke through the obfuscation, the propaganda, the like, you know, when they post the dead kids on the beach in Turkey, and you know, you just like totally like as soon as you see it in all the grocery stores where all the kids go, and they don't even care. They put it right up front, right in your face. And it's just like, man, like I could tell right away they're going for this agenda. You know what I mean? But so like little things like that, because little things with my wife, who maybe she had a lot of friends who also were just in the same boat, literally like just thinking, hey, you know what? This is the way we got to help as many because they're dying on the beaches and whatnot. But it's like, well, yeah. But you find out later, you know, this is dad's fault because dad wanted to just go get dental care and overload the boat or whatever, like, propaganda story that they totally just fly by for whatever reason. And then the next one, the big one, huge stuff, was with COVID. Holy cow.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, and you were right there. I mean, I got to hand it to you, like, I cannot thank you enough. Like you've mentioned this before, like 3,500 years of philosophy. It hasn't budged. But you come in, you're giving peaceful parenting. You're beyond legendary. Like, I cannot praise you enough. Like, you've changed so many things for the better. And one of one of those huge things was like, so with COVID, wow. Because, I mean, I'm sure you took a lot of crap for that. You really, like, you called it out. It's the only city that has the level 4, level 5, whatever, antiviral, you know,
pain. Yeah, biological research lab. Yeah, 400 meters from it. Yeah, come on. The pangolin. That's a bat that flew 800 kilometers just get to Wuhan. And I mean, with COVID, I got it from both sides because I wasn't saying there's no such thing as germs. It's all made up and everyone's going to die if they take the vaccine. Like, I wasn't saying that because that was on the more hysterical side of the skeptic side. But of course, I wasn't saying it's some deadly disease that you have to absolutely, you can only survive it with this mRNA bio sludge. And so, yeah, people, I was an equal opportunity annoyer for everyone there because, you know, I mean, I get that people should circle back and say, well, what claims did we make about the vaccine? Did they come true? Sure. Okay. I get that. But people should also, like, there were people who said, you know, everyone who takes the vaccine is going to be infertile and they're going to die. And it's like, well, that didn't happen, like, either. So, I got... COVID just made everyone and everything kind of like an extremist on both sides. And I kind of accept that, you know, the alpha strain, particularly if you were old and obese, man, that was a nasty bug, man. That was a nasty bug. Now, I don't think the solution were the COVID vaccines, but it certainly was a nasty bug. And of course, you know that if you wait, it gets milder and so on, but... Yeah, it was nasty, and people, I don't know, there was never a virus. It's like, oh, I kind of think there was. I do think there was. I was not a fan of the vaccines, but I also didn't think everyone who took them was going to be dead in a couple of years, because now it's been 5 years or 4 years, and there seemed to be some negative indicators, but it's not at this massive die-off that everybody was predicting. And, you know, people need to be responsible and they need to go back, look at their predictions and see what came true and what didn't. And it doesn't seem like either, I guess almost by definition, either of the extremist sides are willing to do that.
Yeah, totally.
And what was your experience talking about COVID when it was going down?
Like I said, I can remember like the experts that you had on. There was one expert you had on a couple of times who said like he just looked at the code of the virus and saw the spike protein, and he just saw that, like, yeah, this is like in a way where it just looks like it's been pieced together or fabricated in a gain-of-function way. So I just remember all these little details and the experts that you had on. And then, yes, it was before all the lockdowns and everything. And before they even, I remember Nancy Pelosi being out in Chinatown saying, yeah, you know, don't be racist and saying it's the China virus or whatever. And but with my wife, she was right there listening. We were on a family trip at the time when you were doing these episodes. And, you know, it was really like something like talking to her about it and then getting her like to kind of just see like, okay, yeah, there's this Wuhan, area, the level 4 facility. And then you have just a bunch of other things that were kind of like iffy. Just that the fact that they said on their, I think it was in the WHO website, that it wasn't transmittable between humans. And there's just all these other things that like, you looked at it and you looked at what the government was saying rather than like, what was actually being done about it. And because of those things, like not lining up, she was on just on board with me. And, of course also, she was with her kids at home at the time. She was like, you know what? I think you're going to take a little bit more time here at home. Then I went out and, brought them the bacon, so to speak. So it was more of that, like, enforcing that sort of risk taking on my end, whereas when, she could be home and spend more time with the kids. So we made the best out of it, that type of thing.
And how were the conversations with other people about it all?
Yeah, you know what? That's another thing that you remind me of, because it wasn't specifically my conversations with it. It was like my wife, she went to family members and she's like, got all this data and she's got these people who are like, they went out, they got the jab, and then they were just like, okay, let's go to all these hockey games and whatnot. And it's like, you're like not immune from this, right? You're not like, you're not going to transmit it to somebody else, right? Like that's still going to happen. In fact, like that was the whole point of, 2 weeks to flatten the curve, was to not go out and mingle and like spread this thing like wildfire, so to speak. But she would just bring this up as like, hey, this is like what you guys are doing, and you saying like, this is so important to like not, infect all the elderly and whoever else is not vaccinated. And she did it in a way that was more like I said, more approachable, more like, hey, we want to not basically spread this and still like basically come off with, like, you don't have to necessarily get the jab, let's say, to fulfill that. You could also just keep social distancing or whatever they're saying, where you don't like spread the disease even more so. So that was just like, talk about integrity and really like, because it could have really been like you said, a hysterical thing. Like I remember a colleague of mine, I just left a coffee mug in my one of my work cars, and because it was my mug, holy cow, because it could have been like me, just drinking it or whatever, touching it, just absolutely just flipped out about it and just said like, you can't be leaving your garbage in here and you could just like spread the disease. I was like, holy shit, like some people they went off the rails during that time. And then to see like my wife, like I said, have that integrity and she even had other friends just say like, how are you approaching this with other people? Because I think I might be taking or doing like the wrong thing, because I'm getting like a lot of backlash and a lot of people are dissociating with me. So I don't know if you had you said that you were back and forth about it, if that, like, you said other people hated you or other people were kind of going with you about it.
Oh, no, I just meant online, not in my life. I mean,
oh, okay.
I don't have any, people who don't reason. I mean, I know this sounds kind of braggy or whatever, right? But, I'm old enough now that I'm able to really pick and choose who I hang out with. So I didn't hang around with people who fell for the mainstream narrative. I would say most of my friends probably tended more towards skepticism.
Yeah, okay.
And so I just meant online, you know, there are people, I mean, still people out there who say that I shilled for COVID and fed the panic and so on. It's like, yeah, dude. I mean, at the beginning, I mean, I got messages from contacts because I was just out in Hong Kong doing a documentary, like in the November before, like it was probably circulating in Hong Kong at the time. So I was out there doing a documentary back in the day, and my contacts were like, you know, this COVID thing is going to be a big deal. It's going to be a huge deal. And yeah, I was keen on caution at the beginning. Sure. I mean, to me, if you don't know what you're dealing with, you know, when I worked up north and we heard the sounds of something snuffling around outside, we didn't assume it was just a moose or a deer, right? You take out your shotgun and you get your flashlight and you get ready for battle because it could be a bear that's really hungry. I mean, for all you know, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so for me, when it first came out, like, oh, something has escaped from a bio lab in China, I'm like, yeah, I think reasonable caution is the way to go until we get a sense of the shape of this thing. And also because I knew everyone was lying about it, at least from the media and the government. And also knew the incentives were all kinds of messed up about all of this, that the Democrats had all their weird incentives and so on. And so, yeah, I was cautious, and I counseled some caution at the beginning. Now, I didn't say the government should lock everyone down because I'm an anarchist. So of course, I'm not going to say that.
Of course not. No.
But yeah, I and people like you fed into the panic. It's like, no, not really.
I just think
that if you don't know what's out there, I mean, that anybody who says, well, an engineered virus has escaped from a biolab, and anyone who then says, I know it's not dangerous, is just lying. I didn't know. Nobody knew. Mm. Anybody who claimed to know was lying. Yeah. So, yeah, but of course people are like, well, you fell for the PSYOP and so on. And it's like, no, I never got vaccinated. I never got my child vaccinated. Yeah. And it was not easy at all to avoid that stuff. In Canada in particular, they really came down hard on people who were resisting or pushing back. And so I was not indifferent enough to the radical skeptics. And of course, I was not believable. I was not a believer enough for the NPCs who are just following the mainstream narrative. And of course, it's easy for people to say, you know, at the beginning, right? If they heard about this COVID vaccine's come out of a bio lab, and I was never afraid. It's like, well, that's, I mean, hey, I'm glad that you were never afraid. You were lucky. Yeah. I mean, because if it had turned out to be quite a dangerous pathogen, and like really dangerous, more so than what happened, if it did turn, and you weren't afraid, then you just made a stupid mistake, and you could have got yourself damaged or killed. You know, like the people who in the Black Death, like the priests are like, I'm not afraid to go from bedside to bedside and give comfort. It's like, okay, I mean, that's great, but you're going to die of the plague, right? So, yeah, the people who were like, well, I wasn't afraid. I'm like, hey, that's great. You know, it's like when I was working up north, if there was a sound of some animal outside the tent and a guy got up and just went out in his underpants and I wasn't scared. I'm like, yeah, it turns out it was only a deer. It's like, well, I'm glad that it turned out to be only a deer, but it's not intelligent to not be cautious about the unknown. And when people say, I can't believe you'd go out there with a shotgun, it's like, yeah, well, because it probably isn't a bear, but it might be. So yeah, that was sort of the thing that happened at my end.
Better to have it, not need it, and need not have it.
No, it's like, you know, I mean, I'm sure you're a homeowner, and every now and then, of course, what happens? Well, every now and then, there's some sound, like you wake up, was that breaking glass? Did I hear some weird sound? And you know, I mean, I've gone down, of course, every time that I've heard a strange sound from downstairs, I've gone downstairs. And I've never found a prowler. But every time I hear a weird sound, I'm going to go downstairs.
Yeah.
And I'm going to check.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have a weapon and so on. And so I the people who are, I'm just going to go back to sleep. I'm like, hey, you know, 99 times out of 100, that makes good sense. Good for you. But you can't say that for sure.
Absolutely not. Oh.
And what other sort of stuff have you had to sort of deal with in trying to get people to have a more rational approach to things?
I'll try to handle more of the positive stuff at first because I want to inspire all the people listening. Because, like, I don't know, you said maybe a couple podcasts ago that, you know, it was kind of ripping off old wounds when people were coming to you for advice, for relationship advice and whatnot. And I'm kind of like that same sort of character as well, where people, I don't know if it's like I have like this gentler approach to things, or like I've heard people say I have like a calmer demeanor. And so they come with me and they I guess they're probably like curious to hear, like, you know, what my take would be on it. And some of the things that I've, you know, gotten was like, let's get married. I could just tell, like, all my wife's friends, they're just like, you know, what would you give me as like advice for like finding a man? And and this was a few years after I started listening to you, so I was like, all right, well, I know exactly what to do. And I just said, you know, well, because they were all at this moment of time, it was Netflix and chill. You know what I mean?
Where
they
were just like, that was the dating scenario, right?
Yeah, Tinder was really like starting up then.
Right.
So you remember all that part? Yeah. Okay. So like during that time, so I was just like, well, you know, because I heard from all my wife's friends that, you know, they basically would invite these guys over, you know, to get intimate, and the guys were just like, you know, not. They were not for that at all. And so the girls were
the guys weren't for getting intimate?
Yeah, the girls said that they noticed that the guys were just like, you know, they really wanted to just watch a movie. They didn't want to like have a one night stand or like get intimate like that on the first date.
Oh, that's interesting. So the women wanted casual sex, but the men didn't.
Yeah.
Hey, I thought we were here to watch a movie, that kind of thing. That's interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that, but go on.
I know. Well, I'm more out by the countryside, so I guess maybe these, I don't know. Who knows what these kind of guys are like, but it's been a mix and match of both, I would say. But that was the general trend that I heard from these women. And so, because super happy, want everybody else to, you know, meet their future husbands, of course. I just said, you know, basically, the only thing you got to do is wait a month or two before you get intimate with this person, and really give them like the time to get to know you and trust you and that type of thing. And I mean, there was like maybe five or six women that were just all like laser eyes focused on me. And I mean, I don't remember exactly all of them, but I remember the at least two of them that I did tell this to. You know, they're both happily married. They've got a bunch of kids, and you know, I don't want to take credit for this, but you know, your wedding speech that you gave, where you just said, you know, at the end, like, now go forth and multiply. I used that in a couple weddings. So at the very end, I just said, you know, now go forth, and the first couple, they had already had two kids. I'm like, so go multiply more.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, I love kids. And, you know, my birthday wishes are every year just like more kids. Like, even if they're not mine, like my friends, like, and loved ones in the area, just have more kids. Like, the more the merrier. It's just it's so amazing. Like, especially when they get bigger. Like, you said many times, like, you see the forest growing within their minds and how they're developing. And it's like, who would not? And because I care so much for these people, like, who would not want to like basically spread that and tell them, especially when they're in their 20s still, you know what I mean? Because it's just so much, it's so much easier. And now, because they've started earlier, some of them, unfortunately, have had miscarriages or have had IVF problems. But because they got started early enough, right? It still was enough time
to turn it around, right? Yeah,
exactly. So, like, I won't say all of them had like, you know, huge families, but the ones that did have problems, they found those problems early enough where they could get the you know, themselves in, get seen, and figure out what was going on. And like I said, a lot of them, that, you know, I'm so happy for them. You know, they got their kids, and yeah, I just had to tell you that I borrowed your wedding speech, at least the end of it, because yeah. It's just such a great thing. And another thing about the first couple is one of them is an accountant. I just knew that they would get the joke too. Just super,
yeah, I get it.
Super thrilled. And you know, same with the other wedding that I went to. It wasn't at the toast or anything, but I just told the groom, I was just like, you know, go out, multiply, just multiply, man. And he's like, I am. And so he's got two more now. So I was like, yeah.
That is great to know. And it's nice to hear that pronatalist thing is out there. And I hope that people have given you some thanks for that.
You know, yeah, it's the type of thing that just keeps giving, because, you know, some of them, they're not like directly asking me for that advice, but I can tell, because you've mentioned before the baby rabies and whatnot, and some women have been like, you know what, I just feel like, you know, I got to focus on somebody else's like issues for right now. And I'm like, you know, it's great for that. You know, having a few kids, because then you could worry about, you know, taking care of their issues. And I just segue it in. And I mean, because I know that their bodies, that's what their bodies are telling them to do. But, you know, like you said, the antinatalist argument is it's so heavy and propagated out.
Wow,
so
yeah, it's very sad.
It's like I said, even though that they maybe had trouble in the beginning, but it's like, it was early enough where they were just like, okay, yeah, let's figure out these issues. And then they start having, you know, a couple more kids. And it's just like, so like, I'm so happy for them, because yeah, how many people basically reached the wall or whatever, and you know, they've basically been sold whatever, you know, bad sale of goods, saying like, you know, it's not worth it, it's the kids are such a hassle and whatnot. And it's like, you know, I just do whatever I can every single time to stomp that out, and just to basically be infectious with how awesome it is to have kids, how happy I am with my kids, and how proud I am of them. And just, I mean, it's like, if you really care about somebody and you have something that you look, you genuinely appreciate in your friends or loved ones, you just really don't want them to miss out on that. So it's an infectious thing, because it's not like a performative or manipulative type of thing. It's just like, you know, it's going with what nature intended. And you said, like, in the past, like, even if childhood and child rearing has been a nightmare, according to, you know, what psychohistory and Lloyd DeMoss was saying, was it was still, like, you know, on the way up, and there had to be genuine moments of appreciating kids, because why would they want to have them all? I mean, I don't know. It's just, I don't know if you've had the same effect on people around you, or, you know, with people sending you emails about, you know, how many kids they've been having. I know you said that you occasionally get emails and whatnot from people showing how many kids they've had. I've sent you at least two or three of them, because I'm always like thanking you every time I have my kids. So thank you so much for that, especially. That was not something.
Sorry, how many kids do you have?
I have three kids.
Oh, how lovely. What ages?
9, 6, and 4.
Nine, 6, and 4. And how different do you find their personalities? I mean, I only have one, so I don't have that kind of comparison.
Yeah, you know what? It's like, I would say it's really fascinating, because I kind of get to see, like for my daughter, so she looks a lot like my sister's daughter. And, you know, they don't really look alike in any way, but just like the hair color, the mannerisms they do, like, it's sort of like, it's just fascinating to see like those similarities. And then, yeah, it's sort of like, you know, she has like my wife's just so good with like music and with just little things that they are super talented at. With like when I was younger, I was really good at like a lot of things, like gymnastics, football, golf and whatnot. But like my daughter, she's like super, super talented with gymnastics. Same with my sons. They're also like that. And it's sort of like, I feel like, oh man, that was something that I was really good at and really liked growing up, but it wasn't something that was ever pursued. I went through like other different types of sports. So like, I see that they have just little pieces of what I had. And then I also see like my grandfather, my other grandfather, and their two different boys. It's really fascinating to see how, like, you know, it's almost like they skipped one generation, but they still look and they remind me so much of not just one grandfather or the other, but they like both. And it's in their own little ways. So I'm like thinking, you know, when you have all your grandkids running around, I'm sure you'll have little stuff or whoever.
Yeah, so
reminds you of the chip off the old block, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's really fascinating to see. And then, like I said, because I've known so many of these people over the years and seen how they like sort of developed, it just feels like, now that I know what they're good at, what they have for interests, I can kind of just like really like prop that up. And especially with like computers and computer games, and some of them are really good with puzzles, like I was. They all have like different pieces of my personality, my wife's personality, and it's fascinating to see what takes hold and really like try to encourage them as much as possible to run with it.
And how is it for you socially with philosophy?
You know, most recognition I ever got for it was at one of our friends' weddings, and they just said that I had a really, really interesting way of looking at the society and politics. And I don't know if they were just trying to be nice or like, but it was enough to like start up a conversation at the table we were at. I think deep down, like I said, they kind of understand that I maybe have a little bit more of an edge than others, like in terms of like, you know, it could be anything with like COVID or with kids or with just being a genuinely like virtue and happy person. I would say what it's probably done more like what is that called? Where like I've sort of like revealed people that have been sort of like, you know, hiding, so to speak. Like just certain people I would post, like for instance, the race statistics on like the proportion of black population in a city versus how much the crime rate is. And posting something like that, or showing how many interracial rapes happen between whites on blacks versus blacks on whites, and how it's like virtually zero for whites on blacks, but then it's like totally like astronomical in the difference from blacks on whites. And then those types of people are just like, they lose their everything. They just start calling me like, oh, you're racist, you're all this. And I just tell them, I just say like, you know, hey, you disagree, show me the facts, show me the data that shows otherwise, and I'll be more than happy to basically like, you know, say this is bull, bogus, or whatever. So be it. But no, they don't come in. They just start throwing around the pejoratives and the ad hominems. And I'm just like, okay, so I demand an apology. And I demand that you take back what you said, because what you've done is basically, you know, you've painted me as like I'm some sort of brown shirt going around, and you're doing that in the way to say like, oh yeah, you don't want to be called brown shirt, a racist, and because of that reason, I'm going to just quietly like, or quickly just say, oh no, I'm not gonna be like a racist. Please don't call me that. Now I just double down. I just say, if you do not apologize, and because I explained that you're doing this specifically because if you know my history, you know, like, I wore the uniform that took those bastards out, okay? Mm. Like, I am the farthest thing from that bullshit. So if you're going to, like, call me out on that, then you either apologize, and I give them 48 hours, like you've said, and if they don't apologize within the 48 hours, then, you know, peace be with you, because that has been a very ironclad way for me to kind of, like, get the people out of my life that, like, I don't want to have anything to do with them. Things are not going well for them. I mean, I don't want them to go bad for them, but it's like you said, you know, when you see things like that for people that are just truly evil, like to call yourself my friend, but then to just throw me under the bus like that. Mm. No. Get out of my life. I don't want you anywhere near me or my kids. Because of what happened in Charlotte Kirk, I just said, like, you're painting me in the same way that all these people painted him, and look what happened. And you keep doing the same stuff. Like, they don't stop. So I just, like, if you don't apologize, all right, good luck. If you ever find the red pill or whatever, you come over the other side, by all means, say you have and that you're, you know, sorry. We'll continue to strike it up again, but no, you're gone. You're dead to me.
Yeah, those people aren't interested. And of course, if you have people in your life who are dangerous that way, of course, one of the big problems, as you know, is that they could end up informing on you or trying to get you fired or, you know, like, really kind of crazy stuff can, I mean, we saw this under COVID, right? That some people's neighbors were really happy to say, hey, man, they got three cars in the driveway. Mr. Cop, you better come on by. I mean, they can be quite dangerous to have around. I sort of always remember when they opened up the sort of Soviet archives and the Eastern German archives, like, one in three neighbors was, like, happily informing on others for wrong thing, or just even getting back. You know, I remember in Vietnam, when America was in Vietnam, they set up a bounty to said, hey, man, if you know Viet Cong, if you know a communist in your neighborhood, you know, let us know and we'll take him out. And so what happened was all of these people said to the local Vietnamese, said to the Americans, oh, yeah, that guy over there, total communist. Yeah. And it turned out it's just a guy who they owed him money.
Yeah.
And they just wanted to take that off, right? Or it was some guy who, you know, I think that guy slept with my wife, and he just used the American soldiers they just did a sort of use them as attack dogs and so on, right?
Mm.
And so, yeah, all of that was pretty bad. Yeah, so yeah, people are dangerous to have around if they don't think for themselves. They really are going to be very, very bad for your long-term health.
Yeah. And sorry, you were saying,
Oh, no, that was it. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I've been on a ramble a few times. So yeah, by all means, I'm really, really glad to hear all your thoughts. It's probably, yeah, like I said, with social media, I love, not that I want to, you know, destroy the argument and, like, basically, like, rub it in their face, but I do know that, like, because of the way I grew up, it was very, very hostile, very violent. If you address people in face to face, and then that's why I address these people online, is because at least I know that I can call these people out, and everybody around, all the family or friends or whoever are related to that person, also knows, okay, this is somebody who's, you know, either they're going to basically be all in the same boat and call whoever racist or whatever. I mean, it was crazy. Like, my sister, she was out for Halloween one year, and she was, I don't know, she painted herself up like some cartoon character, like Bluey or something like that. And because she was like a dog, you know, she painted her, it was either her face or like her nose with like black. And it was Halloween. Like, they were going trick-or-treating. And they were just like, oh, that's racist, black-faced. And they were, like, threatening her online or whatnot with all these, like, you know, hate crime. Whoa. It's just like, I'm a fucking cartoon character. Like, grow a set, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like she's going out doing Robert Downey Jr. or anything like that. It's like, no, she's just out with her kids on Halloween trick or treat. And yeah, maybe she didn't have a life-size version of whatever that cartoon character was, but it's like, my God, like, get those people away. Like, they are so dangerous. And by all means, like, it's hysterical. And for what? Like, oh, like, is it really, like, going to be, like, all these hoaxes?
Well, it's for the joy of bullying. Most people's ideologies or belief systems simply exist to give them permission to unload hatred and feel like a good person, right? There's, this person did blackface. I'm going to, you know, destroy their lives. And, of course, nobody wants to sit there and say, you know, maybe I'm just kind of an a-hole who, you know, just likes bullying people. No, they don't want to say that. So what they say, of course, is, no, this person is an evil Nazi racist and I'm going to put them in their place. And it's just permission. It's just endless permission to bully. That's really all it's about.
What do you think about the Southern Poverty Law Center? What that they just revealed
about
that?
You mean as a whole, or what just happened?
No, that's what Cash was talking about with you know, how they pay. What was it, $3 million?
At least that's what there is alleged. So if they open the books up, my guess is going to be a whole lot more than that, and it's going to be interesting to see how did they coordinate with the Biden administration, how did they coordinate with social media. Were the bans that they put forward or that they advocated for fraudulent or not? I mean, this is a very interesting question. So, I mean, my guess is, though, they're gonna just wait out the legal process until the Democrats get back in power, and then it'll all go away.
Sure. What a timeline we're living in, man. I just, when I read that, I was like, gotta be kidding me. Like, I mean, holy cow. That's just like straight out of an Ayn Rand novel. Like, I guess she could write that. Like,
But from an amoral standpoint, I mean, it was a great business move.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they invest a couple of mil and they get, you know, $100 million. Well, probably a couple of $100 million since 2016 in additional financing. Yeah. So for $3 million, maybe you get $300 million. I mean, that's a 100-to-1 payback. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Maybe, you can't beat that from a business case standpoint. Again, you know, taking the basic morals and ethics out for sure.
Mm. So yeah, were you finished here?
And how long have you been listening to what I do?
Like I said, it was probably about 2012, and I know Bill Whittle's video came out around 2012, maybe 2013, but I know, it's been around 14 years now.
Wow, that's wild. And how long have you been married?
It was 2016. It was a great year, what can I say? A lot of stuff went down in 2016, but yeah, so it's been 10 years now.
Wow, congratulations. Well, listen, I really do appreciate you calling in and letting me know the good news of philosophy. It's something that somebody suggested not too long ago, which I thought was interesting. And I also do, it sounds like you're really navigating the complexities and challenges of getting the truth out in a tricky world very well. And I hugely appreciate that. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention on today's call?
Yeah. Mainly it was because of, I'm surely going to be going into the entrepreneurship world. And I know you said that you've had some problems with just the way that things were done, maybe at the administrative level with things being more cutthroat or shady. And because I was trying to, you know, basically steer that as best I can, how to sort of like navigate that, I guess. If that makes any sense, if you have any words of wisdom in that category.
Sure. Can you be a bit more specific about how I can help?
So let's say, so I'm going to be maybe picking some partners, investors, and if there are any different types of people to watch out for, maybe specific type of venture capitalists or Or anything else that, you know, I know you said that some guy like had been churning your account, that type of thing.
Oh, yeah, that was not a business partner. But yeah, I think if I sort of had to go back, I would say, well, first of all, sometimes it's worth just going into it just for the experience and so on. So that can be of value. But what I would do is I would look for a couple of dangerous types in business. One is the status people.
Okay.
And the status people are those, they talk a big talk, you know, like the Elizabeth Holmes style people.
Yeah, yeah.
They just talk a big talk and they want the big payout and they want to, you know, drive the big car and they just, you know, want to be the big dude, right? The big man on campus and all of that.
Okay.
And those kinds of people are going to be tough to be in business with because they're in the business for the sake of their ego and their vanity and looking cool and so on. And they will always overhype what it is that you're up to and all of this kind of stuff. And so, yeah, that kind of stuff, that is pretty rough. And so I would sort of try and take away from those. I'm sorry, try and stay away from those sorts of people. And what else? People who don't have a sort of passion for it, they're in it for some reason other than the business itself. And, you know, of course, businesses have to make money and all of that. So, you know, that's not any sort of big complaint. But the people who are in it because they just want to make a bunch of money and they don't particularly care about the mission, you won't get much additional work out of that, which is not great. You won't get much additional work out of those sorts of people. So that's not ideal.
Yeah. Okay. And how do you attract like those, like the ones that are like the good ones, so to speak, then, if you could? Because like I'm looking towards the incubator process right now and my idea. So I'm just thinking like what I can kind of give those types of people, like as some meat to chew on, like what kind of other people I'm looking to, just partner up with. And I don't know if that's something you went through or if it was something.
Yeah. So it also is a challenge if you have people who are in a very different sort of phase in life, that can be a challenge when it comes to a business. So when I was in business, when I was sort of first in the business world, then I was just a kid, a student, and no overhead and so on. And some of the other people who were in business with me, you know, they had two kids, teenagers, and they're, you know, they had a house, a mortgage, they had a cottage and so on. And it was kind of tough because there was just such differences in our life circumstances that when it came to making sacrifices, they, because they had much higher, what are they called, burn rate, right? They had much higher burn rates than I did. They ended up, they didn't have any choices to sort of take salary cuts or things like that. But, and so there was always a bit more pressure on me to make those kinds of sacrifices sometimes. And that was tough. I certainly did start to feel a little annoyed at that after a while. So again, none of these things are deal breakers, but it's just something to look out for, that if the people that you're in business with have a very different life circumstances or situations than you do. You know, like I was a single guy and some of my business partners, of course, they had a stay-at-home wife and two or three or four kids. And it was just, and I always sort of felt like, okay, well, then does that mean that I have to take the sacrifices in a sense? And also when it comes to working late, right? So I had a guy I worked with who his family had a cottage and, you know, he wanted to beat the traffic. So sort of Friday at noon, he would leave the office and wouldn't come back till sort of Monday at noon. And, you know, these are sometimes where we'd have to work nights and weekends to get something ready to go.
Yeah.
And he had, like, he had to get to the cottage. That was sort of his thing. And I did not have to get to any kind of cottage because I didn't have a wife, I didn't have kids or anything like that. So, And, you know, what are we going to say? No, you can't go and see your family. Like, you know, that seems like not particularly a good plan, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I found those kinds of differences. If you both, you know, like 20 and you don't have kids and then you can work all night and all weekend and all those kinds of things, you know, mm-hmm. I think that's good. Yeah. But if there's real big differences, that can be tough to navigate or negotiate, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And we can't be up all night playing Counter-Strike and all those other fun-filled, adrenaline-filled games.
Yeah, it was kind of funny because the single guys and I, you know, we would stay late, right?
Yeah.
We would stay late and we'd play some online, well, not online, but sort of LAN games. Together and so on.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'd go out for dinner and, you know, a lot of it, you know, sometimes we'd chat about work or ideas or we'd brainstorm and things like that. And that was just a kind of thing that the women in particular, there's no negatives towards them, but it just was sort of a basic fact that the women in particular, if they had kids, it's like, you know, 4:59, they're packing up. Like they got to go.
Yeah.
And they got to go pick up their kids from daycare and so on. And they could never do that kind of nights and weekend stuff. Also, when it comes to travel, right? If you have, if you're in a business with someone, it won't be the case, of course, because you've got three kids, right? So you probably want to spend some time. Obviously, you want to spend time with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so on. But if you're going to hire younger people who can do the nights, weekends, and travel, then I would suggest that you try and figure out something to do with compensation that takes that into account, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yes.
Sounds and like look for excitement. Yeah, look for excitement. Yeah. If you get the excitement, they're thrilled to be doing it. They can't wait. They can't wait to start. They're chomping at the bit. They do stuff for free, so to speak, just because they're so excited about it. I mean, that's you got to have that emotional energy and excitement because Lord knows, you know, there's a whole lot of negative things that happen in the world of business, stuff that you're just going to have to try and find a way to survive. If you have that level of enthusiasm or excitement, you know, everything takes forever and everything is 10 times harder than you think as a whole. And if you have that level of excitement, you can push through all of that. If you don't, what happens is like the business and life and so on will grind you down because, you know, there's negatives, problems. I mean, 95% of life, as you know, is just like solving problems. So life will kind of grind you down. Business will kind of grind you down. There'll be difficult clients. There'll be technology that doesn't work. There'll be promises made that aren't kept. There'll be people who don't deliver. There'll be deals that don't get closed. There'll be deals that do get closed, but you don't get paid forever. You'll sell to someone and then they'll leave the job and you have to start all over again. Like the stuff that just becomes a drag. And if you don't have that very high level of enthusiasm or excitement about what you're doing, it's very hard to succeed. Success is 95% just having the excitement to push on no matter what. And if you have people who are genuinely excited, I think that the biggest single thing that I would put into the business world is just you have to be rabidly excited about what it is that you're doing. And if you have that, then you can, that excitement can replenish your exhaustion. Sort of, I used to think of it like a big body of water, like a lake or whatever, right? And the sun is beating down on it and it's getting smaller and smaller, right? Because it's all evaporating into the air. And there's supposed to be a cycle, right? There's supposed to be a cycle, like it goes up into the air, it gathers together in clouds, and then you get the clouds, they get together and rain back down. So it replenishes the lake, right? So life is like the sun, you know, dries up your enthusiasm or dries up your energy and so on. And how do you get it renewed? How do you get your energy renewed? Now, a lot of people get their energy renewed to some degree by just not being at work, like going on vacation or something like that. And, you know, that can certainly help. And that's not the end of the world or anything terrible. But it is important that there are people who have the excitement to replenish that which just dries up based upon life as a whole.
Totally. Very good. And did you find that easier now rather than earlier, maybe getting those types of people, or does it seem like the generations are, what do you think, they're little bit more gung-ho or more productive?
Sorry, gung-ho, you mean in the business world?
Yeah, I mean, if you come across people, just the general outlook of what's out there, I guess. If it looks like it's getting better, if it's a little bit more negative, or it just seems like it's maybe with AI coming out that a lot of people are more like pessimistic about this type of advancement in technology, I guess.
Well, in general, the NPCs, like the people who don't think for themselves, they can't be entrepreneurs anyway, because you have to right. You have to be a self-generating individual in order to be an entrepreneur. You have to generate your own ideas, your own solutions, your directions, and so on. Like when I was head of technology, like a chief technical officer, I had to be very creative and figure out how the software could be best developed and enhanced and so on.
Yeah.
And so NPCs as a whole, they just do what they're told and don't generate their own ideas, and they're kind of hollow. Mm-hmm. They don't really have an inner life. They don't think critically. They don't have an observing ego. So, I mean, they're fine for some aspects of the business, but you don't want to have them in your business world at the entrepreneurial level, because they get stunned. They get easily overwhelmed and paralyzed by it. Too much information or too many, they have option paralysis. It's like asking a train track. It's like asking a train to go on a random journey. It's like, well, I can't, I have to go where the train tracks are. And, you know, maybe you have a couple of choices, you know, go left or right at particular switches. But I would definitely try and stay away from the sort of NPCs at the creative entrepreneurial generational level. It's really unfair. Like you're just asking them for things that they really can't do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I'm not really coming up with any more questions, unless you have anything.
No, I think that's great. And I really do appreciate the conversation. I think it's very helpful. And it's really nice to, of course, hear how these philosophy success stories, because as sort of people have pointed out, and you know, they're quite right, that, of course, the people who call back tend to be people who are continuing to have problems or who aren't taking philosophy as seriously as perhaps they could or should. And so I appreciate that call, and I hope that you, if there's anything else I can do to help you with entrepreneurial stuff as you get started, please let me know.
Is it just a message you need here on the Teams?
Yeah, you can email me or you can message me here on the app as well.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. Just as a last note, it's always fascinating to me. You know, philosophically, you've made the case about, like, you have the identical twin brothers, and, you know, the one that grows up and becomes an alcoholic, and you ask him why, and he's like, you know, well, my dad was an alcoholic, and his dad, and so on and so forth, and that's why I became an alcoholic. And then the other one that just says, you know, well, I saw what it did to my dad, and I saw what it did to my grandfather, and I never touched stuff, never touched alcohol, and for that reason, I'm, you know, good and set. And that question always is like fascinating me, because it just seems like at some point there's something's got to give, and I'm always trying to like figure out what we can do, sort of, which is why I mentioned in the beginning about saying, you know, we have a sort of debate just to like to agree, hey, we're, you know, we're going in this trying to help people and solve problems, and, you know, it's such a great way to like live, and it's so much happier. So just to kind of like bring that home and to bring that to anywhere I go, it's very contagious. And I see some of these negative people that I've been working around, they always start like, I don't know, they like get like a second wind around me, and they start like coming to me with ideas and like, hey, can you, you know, if you got 5 minutes, can we look at this? And you know, it's sort of cool to see how even some of the people that are on the fence can come over, and maybe they're pessimistic in nature or something, or more NPC-like, but just to like kind of get them over the fence and bring them on over and like just throw them over my shoulder, so to speak, and just carry them with me. It's really like philosophy. It's such a powerful thing. Like if you know like how to basically just override all the propaganda, because I mean, the propaganda, it's based off of so much negativity. Like, nobody's going to want to follow that negativity the whole time. Like, so some people are just, they're genuinely happy. And when you find those people, you like, network around them, it's such a great place to be. So I just, when you get all these trolls calling you, and I just see, like, you have done, like I said, more than 3,500 years. Like, it's like, to live in this time and to even know that, like, in that smidgen of whatever window that YouTube was not woke and wasn't, like, basically negating and shadow banning or whatever it was with all your videos, like, just to know that I found you through Bill Will, and to know that, like, you've basically had such a great, huge part and inspiration for me. I do whatever I can and whatever way to just, like, spread that and to build that everywhere, because it's so powerful and it's so great to see in others, especially when, like, you read the news and you read anything in the media, and it's like, it's so downtrodden and so negative. It's like, man, we really need all the philosophy we can get. So I want to thank you so much for, like, it's like that Wayne's World movie where Garth and Wayne are just in front of Alice Cooper and they're just, like, begging down, like, I'm not worthy.
Oh, I hate to be a pedant. It wasn't Alice Cooper. It was the Aerosmith guy, Steven Tyler. Yeah, we're not worthy. Hey, come on, man, you're worthy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that. very kind. I appreciate that. And Listen, man, stay in touch. I appreciate the conversation.
Yes, yes. Thank you very much, Steph.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.